This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. It is the Ray Lucia Show, along with my sidekick, Johnny Dean.
Robin. What did Robin, wasn't Robin pretty well useless with Batman? What did he do?
He didn't really have any powers. He had no superpowers.
No. He couldn't do it. He could climb.
It's kind of like what you do on this show.
That's exactly. What I'm saying. The parallels are all there, aren't they?
No, you're a good man. Hey, folks, got a lot of stuff on the docket today. I want to get to this Lessons from the Financial Crisis. Dan Kemp over at Morningstar did a great job. Mostly. I mean, I don't agree with everything that Morningstar has to say, but they're a pretty decent outfit.
Yeah.
And he did sort of a flashback to
what went on.
Yeah, and you'll find it somewhat entertaining. Also, lots of stuff here on IRAs that I didn't get to yesterday. NUA, remember NUA?
That I do.
NUA.
NUA. That I do.
There's stuff on IRAs. I got some good info there. To share. This I found very interesting. Why a broker, you're supposed to say God forbid.
Oh, God forbid. Does this have to do with insurance?
No.
Oh.
It has to do with CDs, actually. Why a broker might be a conservative investor's best option. God forbid.
Oh, see, I always hear that in talk with insurance, when the insurance agents are trained to raise their hand in the air and say, if you should, God forbid, pass away.
Yeah, no, that I was trained as an insurance agent.
I know you were. That's why I thought you were going to the insurance side here.
Yeah, I used to do the whole back the hearse up to the door thing, too.
Yeah.
Many, many years ago. I was 24 years old.
You never took the family picture and put a big X over Dad's?
Of course I did.
Oh, you did?
That's an important thing to do.
What if this were to happen to you?
Blackout.
What would you
do? Now we just put a black bar over their eyes.
That's actually cleaner, I think.
844-RAY-SHOW. If you want to jump on board, the call is free. The advice here is priceless. That is almost guaranteeable. 844-729-7469. Emails at raylucia.com. RAYLUCIA.com. But I start today with this one. Lessons from the Financial Crisis. Folks, you got to sit back. You got to relax. And you got to listen very, very carefully, because what the pundits tell you may just be, how do I say this?
Bolshevik.
Wrong. Incorrect.
So this is Dan Kemp. Here is what he had to say. We are at a fascinating yet hazardous point in the market cycle. Many investors have become accustomed to lofty valuations and low volatility, making the recent reversion to, quote, normal conditions feel anything but normal. Asset managers and investors alike seem to be doing mental gymnastics to justify their views. This happens all the time in investing. This whole recency bias thing, where we've got to justify whatever it is that we are talking about. And what's really dangerous is companies, whether it's Morningstar or people that do blog posts and podcasts and all that stuff, they've got to try to justify their positions. And incidentally, you see this in politics. You see it everywhere.
It's a phenomenon. It's sort of a human phenomenon. Explain what recency bias is very quickly.
Well, that's pretty simple. What did we think was going to happen? You know, what we think is going to happen tomorrow is the same thing that happened yesterday, right?
I went back to, speaking of predictions, I went back a year or so ago and took predictions from the mid to late 70s on what was going to happen by the year 2000. You know what most of them were talking about?
What's that?
Energy crisis. It would be a huge problem by the year 2000. It was going to be complete. It was going to be all energy crisis.
Right.
When was the last time you heard the word energy crisis? Like 1980?
Well, when I was in high school, everybody was worried about population. Remember, Population explosion. Sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, they go back. They took a look-see at the financial crisis. Here's what Mr. Dan Kemp had to say. Let's rewind to March 2007. This was considered to be a Goldilocks period for the world, as the world looked as healthy as ever. Although, as we now know, this assessment of economic health was grossly inaccurate. A false sense of prosperity can be illustrated in countless ways. However, one of the more compelling is to reflect on the March 2007 monthly bulletin from the European Central Bank. Now, the European Central Bank are supposed to be really, really smart people. They tell you how the world is going to turn, just like a soap opera.
I doubt
the world turns.
Yeah, I doubt that. I think they're just there to control the euro, but okay.
Let's see what the ECB had to say. Quote, looking ahead, the medium term, and by the way, this is back March 2007, take some notes. The medium term outlook for economic activity remains favorable. The conditions are in place for the euro area economy to grow solidly. As regards the external environment, global economic growth has become more balanced across regions and, while moderating somewhat, remains robust, supported in part by lower oil prices. External conditions thus provide support for euro area exports. Domestic demand in the euro area is also expected to maintain its relatively strong momentum. Investors should remain dynamic, benefiting from an extended period of very favorable financing conditions, Greece, balance sheet restructuring, accumulated and ongoing strong corporate earnings, and gains in business efficiency. If you can't see this, folks, but when I say something like strong momentum, strong corporate earnings, consumption should also strengthen, employment conditions continue to improve.
Again, this was March of 2007.
All of that turned out to be crap.
Well, it was probably true for the next 10, 11, 12 months, but that's about it.
Here's what Kemp went on to say. We are not picking on the ECB here. It was just one of many institutions whose experts seemingly fell into the trap of recency bias. The notion that we place too much emphasis on the short-term trends is unequivocally important because it is one of the most common and recurring traits that cause financial market cyclicality. If you're not already cynical of short-term projections, maybe the ECB bulletin from the bottom of the market will also help. This one's a little shorter. Just bear with me.
It's all right. I'm fascinated by it.
The uncertainty, in bold, surrounding the global economic outlook is exceptionally high, especially as financial market volatility has soared. Overall, the risks for growth are clearly on the downside. The risks for growth, are on the downside.
Is that negative growth? Is that what they're talking about?
I don't know.
That's one of
those
stupid terms.
They relate mainly to the potential for the turmoil in the financial markets to have a more significant impact on the real economy. The depth and the duration of the global economic downturn will depend crucially on the speed at which the financial crisis can be resolved. Other risks relate to concerns about the emergence and intensification of protectionist pressures and to possible disorderly development owing to global imbalances. Now, this was at the bottom.
This was in 2000.
February 2009.
The bottom of the market was March
9th, 2009. March 9th. Like, you know, 9 days later, yeah. It was howdy doody, folks. It's 15% a year from here on out.
On average.
Something like that, on average.
Yeah, whatever it is.
This reinforces, he goes on, both the danger of paying attention to short-term economic and market noise and the importance of being independently minded. And then he starts talking about valuations. And we'll get into where valuations are today after the break. But there's a common theme here, John, and I talk about this early in every year, and that is the people that come out of the woodwork, and these are bright, talented people.
Sure.
You don't go to work for the ECB, you know, if you got like a C- in economics like I did.
Did you really?
No, I didn't.
I didn't take economics till I was in college.
I took it in college. It was a macroeconomics class. I really enjoyed it. It's kind of my avocation now.
It is for you. It's not for me.
I don't get into the details, but I love the overall economic.
You know, as you know, Ben Stein's a good friend of this show and a good friend of mine. And he is an economist. And when we start talking about the economic events of the past and the present, I get focused on the long term, the strategic plan, the strategy behind what you do, irrespective of how the economy turns. And you'll see that when we come back from the break, why I just don't care.
I love it.
All right, we'll take a quick break, come back. Johnny Dean and me, this is The Ray Lucia Show.
Download the Biz Talk Radio app, available in iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
Hey, this ain't no Trini Lopez version, I'll tell you that. Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Yeah, but did the Beatles ever do Lemon Tree?
I don't think so, but no. If they did, I'll bet you it would still be better than Trini Lopez's version. If I had a hammer.
Oh, man.
Didn't he do If I Had a Hammer, too?
Did he really?
Who did that?
Well, that was, Whoa, the Shark Bite. That was...
Bobby Darin?
Didn't he do If I Had a Hammer?
I don't know if he did. I think it was Trini Lopez.
Well, Trini Lopez may have done. I don't like that song, so I didn't ever bother to look, but I'll look.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Phone lines open, 844-RAY-SHOW. If you want to check in with us, 844-729-7469. Emails at raylucia.com. I'm talking about what happened back in the financial crisis. And I left off at valuations because obviously you would like to buy into the market if valuations are low and sell out of the market when valuations are high, because it would only stand to reason that if your valuations are low, the chances of making more money are certainly obvious at that point. And if you sell out when valuations are high, theoretically, you could protect yourself from the downturn. All right. At least that's the party line. Problem is, it doesn't always work that way.
No. In fact, you have to be prepared such that it doesn't work that way.
I think John Maynard Keynes said it best. The market's going to remain irrational longer than you can,
you can
remain
solvent. Yeah. He was a bright guy.
Very bright guy. In 2007, for example, the market optimism pushed more capital toward equities. With the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio, that's the Shiller CAPE, or whatever they call it.
CAPE Shiller, or CAPE, oh, yeah.
Cape no, Shiller. That's Case Shiller.
Shiller.
That's the
Shiller
real estate
Cape.
One.
Case Shiller, yes.
Yeah, the all CAPE right. is the cyclically adjusted the price-to-earnings ratio. The yeah. Case Shiller is
the
real
estate,
estate
thing.
Index.
Yes.
Okay, there
all
you
right.
go.
Whatever.
It got as high as 26.7. This is in 2007, well above the long-term average, which I think is about 16 point something. So that's pretty substantial. Now, I've talked on this program about the CAPE ratio. I would say within the last year at some point was over 30, 31, 32, even more expensive than it was back in 2007. And it was that way while the markets were going up and up and up. So it doesn't always predict short-term market performance. It's a little better on long-term, but not much. Okay, this contrasted with the gloomy days of March 2009, when fear caused a mass exodus from the markets and the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio fell to just 12.3%. Now, for those just tuning in, to give you some perspective, when the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio in 2007 was 26+, everybody was throwing parties about how great the market conditions were. And when it was at 12.3, in other words, huge buying opportunity, everybody was dooming and glooming it because they just suffered through one of the worst downturns in stock market history. Stands to reason. People get freaked out after the market drops peak to trough 57%.
Well, and they didn't even know that was the trough yet.
That's the problem.
That was it. They had no idea. They were thinking, this is going to go on. This is going to go on another year based on all the data.
It's going to go to zero. See, this is what happens to the brain. When the market takes a big hit like that, everybody, including your advisor, hits the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, because they think it's going lower and lower and lower. Why? Because all of us that have been in this business have been head faked out of the market or into the market many, many times. And it's why timing the market is a fool's game.
I don't know that there are any short-term predictors of the market at all. Have you thought of any?
I think of a lot. And the minute that I find one that's worked short-term, it all of a sudden doesn't work anymore.
That's exactly the point. What happened? Okay, markets turned around March
9th, 2009.
March 9th, 2009. In fact, we're 10 years. What caused it? What external event caused it? What can you look back now, 10 years, and say, that's what caused it to go up? I'm going to tell you the answer. Nothing. Nothing. They just did.
You didn't hear me on the air that day?
It
was actually the 8th. It wasn't the 9th. I missed it by a day. When I said, folks, take every penny you have. Take your emergency fund. Take your kids' college savings.
Sure you did.
Take your grandmother's nursing home money and put it into the market. You didn't hear me say that?
No, and I know why.
Why?
Because you didn't.
Oh, sorry.
But there was nothing. Nothing happened.
Kramer didn't
around.
Say it. Nobody said it. And even if they did, the next time around they wouldn't get it right, and you know that.
No, of course they wouldn't get it right. And nothing happened on October 7th, 2007, when the market started going down, to send it down. It just did.
Now, here's what Morningstar says the valuations are today and yesteryear. On 9/30/2007, the P.E. ratio was 16.32. On February 27th, 2009, it was all the way down to 9.37. This isn't the CAPE. This is just the PE.
Of the S&P.
S&P. And on 12/31/2018, it was at 15.47. So lower than 9/30/2007, but way higher than February of 2009.
Well, as you would expect.
The cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio was almost 27 in 2007, that's September. It dropped all the way down to 12.25, February 2009, March 1, I should say. And then the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio, as I mentioned, is down to 20.06, but still about 20-25% higher than its historical norm.
So, why pay attention to it at all?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Profit margins, 9.32% back then, 9/30/2007. Profit margins in 09 down to 7.04. And profit margins right now, 9.10. So about the same as it was in 07. Dividend yield, 2.18. Got all the way up to 4.33%. That's also somewhat of an indicator. I mean, if you could put your money into the S&P 500 and get paid 4.33% when CDs are paying 0.1% or whatever it was back then, that's pretty attractive. But nobody wants to invest after you got totally destroyed for the last year, year and a half.
It was at 4 point something when?
227.09.
That surprised me. It does. I'm surprised.
Well, there's a lesson to be learned there. And I've talked about this in many seminars across the country. The dividend yield, especially with dividend aristocrats and those companies that continually raise dividends, there are many companies that actually raise their dividends throughout that financial crisis. So dividends don't usually get cut. Companies get penalized in a big way when they cut their dividends. So they don't like doing that. You can actually, and I'll explain when we come back from the break, do okay in a market calamity by looking at dividends in your equity portfolio. I'll explain that when we come back. Fair enough?
I'm all in.
All right, this is the one talk show you must tune into, so stay with
us. Endless scratching.
Send us your feedback by emailing info@biztalkradio.com, or you can send us comments via the BizTalk Radio app.
Wait for the vocals.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. That's Adam on the music. Adam and Jeff on the music,
yeah,
right?
Sitting on a park bench evokes images of, you know, serenity, calm, and all this. And you have a rocking song with a huge, you know, fuzz guitar playing in the back or whatever that was. Interesting juxtaposition of lyric and instrument.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for that, John Dean, and the music. I love it all. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff here, primarily the whole concept of valuations and how wrong the forecasters got it last time around. And we bring this up because, I mean, think about it. We're now at 10 years, John, of a bull market, pretty much a raging bull market. Yet the market for the last 18 years or so, not so hot. Why? Because we've had two fairly significant market crashes. You've got the March 2000, the 3 year in a row down cycle. And then you've got the late 2007 to March of 2009, 57% peak to trough decline. And that had a dramatic impact on the overall performance, the 18 year performance of the stock market, which is about a 5% rate of return. Now, one might look at that and say, well, I've been expecting my stocks to do 8, 9, 10%. Well, they certainly didn't do it over that 18-year period. Anybody that invested, however, 10 years ago is sort of loving life, maybe lulled into a false sense of security.
That happened. We saw it in the late 90s when people sort of said, that's going to go on forever. We saw it with the real estate stuff back before the crash happened. Real estate really is what precipitated that whole downturn anyway in 2007. It was, you know, in fact, in both instances, we had a bubble. None of us really even cared to look at it. But the bubble in the late 90s, that caused the crash. The bubble in real estate caused the 2007 crash. It goes back to this whole recency bias thing where people think, well, things are going great now. They're going to continue forever.
Now, let's talk about buy and hold for just a minute, because this article, and I'm talking about what Morningstar was alluding to here, and that is because valuations are seemingly high right now, maybe it's not such a red hot idea to be invested in the market. That was sort of not the central theme, but it was an underlying tone. And I really despise that kind of tone, because it could be yet another head fake. And if people jump out of the market today and the market keeps going up for the next 5 or 10 years, they're going to be very, very disappointed. Because remember, when you jump out, you've got to make another decision, don't you?
You got to figure out when to get back in.
When are you going to jump back in? So the point that I made before the break that I said that I would cover is if you go back to 227-2009, the dividend yield fell all the way down to 2.18% in September of 2007. But in February, or call it March 1 of 2009, the dividend yield on the S&P 500 was all the way up to 4.33%.
Pretty high by historical standards.
Very high by historical standards. Now, if you bought into the market, doesn't matter when you buy into the market, the dividend yield is the dividend yield, and it rarely changes in terms of dollars and cents. In other words, companies try desperately not to cut their dividends. That's an almost white flag move for companies. And when those firms that buy high dividend paying companies, they want to see the dividends increase, not decrease, because what happens is a mutual fund manager that's getting paid money to get you a good dividend yield, when their companies start to cut dividends, they're going to cut the stock out of the mutual fund. So companies desperately seek, or at least try, to keep their dividend from being cut.
Yeah, it's an interesting notion, and it's true. I mean, you know, even if they think they can't afford to do it, I would guess the last thing that they want to do is to cut the dividend. We saw it with, what was it, Ford, fairly, probably about 10 years ago. But it stayed the same. The impact is even greater because I think it had stayed the same for decades.
Many companies actually have increased dividends, even through the crash, as I said before. Mm-hmm. But that's not my point. My point is this. If you designed a strategy, a retirement strategy, around having safe annuitized income using actuarial science, and also as a backdrop have the ability to use a reverse mortgage to buy you time during these market crashes, and if you follow the research that I've discussed numerous times on this program, that pretty much says you could go through a 15-year period where the markets either do really well or the markets don't do very well at all. But the next 15 years, they do fantastic. If they've done poorly, you're still okay. So this 18-year cycle that I just talked about, of which maybe the first 7-8 years, not so hot, the next 8-9 years, pretty darn good. The dividends through all of that have actually held up fairly well. So if you've got enough income coming in from annuitized income, if you have enough income coming in from alternative sources, I'll say real estate, which typically is not moving in lockstep with the stock market. It does from time to time, but by and large, if you own a piece of property with low leverage, the worst thing that happens to you is you might have to lower your rents a little bit to stay competitive, right?
Yes.
But you don't go to zero. You typically don't go to zero. And there are ways to protect yourself. I don't have time to get into it. But now your stock portfolio that you bought in at $100,000, 10 years later is at $200,000. The dividend yield's at 2.5%. So what's 2.5% of $200,000 is like $5,000. The market crashes, you're still bringing in those dividends because companies are not going to willy-nilly just cut them across the board, at least not 500 companies doing it all at the same time. So if you bought enough time, and I guess this is my point, John, if you can structure your retirement portfolio to support you for the next 10 or 15 years, as I have talked about many times, 10 or 15 years from now, between annuitized income, between alternative or call it real estate income, and the dividend yield from your equity portfolio that you've left alone for the last 15 years should be able to support you even if you want a 4% distribution. And I've kind of proven that out on paper. I can't do it on the radio, but I'm happy to share it with you if you want to email me. Just go to raylucia.com, click on the Ask Ray button. And that's, I think, how you can secure your financial future in times like these where the pundits are coming out of the woodwork. Half are saying, go Trump. You know, the other half are saying he's going to destroy us. And I'm saying, I don't care what the pundits are saying, because most of the time they're wrong. I need a strategy that's better than the pundits. And I need a strategy that ignores the noise.
You're talking again about using income from what would essentially be the equity portion of your portfolio.
I am, and I know that sounds like it's smacks of hypocrisy.
No, I don't think so. It's not, because we probably don't need to explain it, but I mean the dividend portion of it is what you're using to help support your income. And you're talking about just over almost like bridging the gap is, I think, what you're saying, between a certain period of time, like you only need it for the next 10 years. Is that what I'm
getting at? Yeah, I use 15 years, but it could be 10 years. Absolutely. The fact of the matter is, you need to have a head start. And the head start means you've got enough safe money in a bucket,
yes,
that you can withdraw from to allow the stock market to do what the stock market is going to do, whether you can control it or not, because you can't. And over 15-year periods, typically the stock market will get you about an 8% rate of return. There will be times when it only gets you like a 4% rate of return for the first 15 years. But the dividend yield will still be a robust part of your retirement strategy that can be tapped into if you need to. A reverse mortgage can be tapped into if you need to. And the reason I bring that up is because of the unbelievable work that Michael Kitsis did on these 15-year cycles, because the next 15 years has always been a bad 15-year rolling period, has always been
followed
by a good one. So it's, and we come back from the break, I'll finish on that thought because it's brilliant stuff. I'll see if I can find the article too. Don't go away. It's the Ray Lucia Show.
Hey, not to brag.
Bullish market. Keep listening to Biz Talk Radio.
Online at biztalkradio.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information. Probably one of the most important topics that we've covered over the years is something that Michael Kitsis alludes to as a regime-based retirement projection. And I found one of his many research articles on this subject. And I'd like to just read from the executive summary because it's super important, John, that people get this right, because so many people use averages for their return assumptions. Most advisors use averages for their return assumptions, but the market doesn't move in averages.
Not over the short term. The longer term you have, the closer you can get to the averages.
So here's what he said, and I'll try to be quick with this, but I think it's important, and you can look it up. Our regime-based retirement projections, a better way to model the new normal. This goes back to 2012, so I've been talking about it since then, if you can believe it. Quote, financial planners seem to increasingly agree we may be in a new normal, an environment where returns are lower due to a combination of high market valuation, low interest rates, debt deleveraging, and associated lower economic growth. Accordingly, it has become increasingly popular to reduce long-term return projections for clients from their historical standards. Yet the reality is that while returns may be reduced for the next decade, it doesn't necessarily mean clients will experience low returns for the entirety of their multi-decade retirement. Just as those who retired in prior low return environments, like in the 1970s, may have had a bad decade of returns, but an average or even above average 30-year result. A better alternative may be to model retirement as a sequence of investment regimes, extended periods of time that have specific risk and return expectations, followed by a subsequent period of time that have their own expectations. For instance, instead of reducing 30-year returns, clients might look at the impact of having an average return of 5% for the first half of their return and 15% for the second half, reflecting the market cycles seen throughout history. Could this actually represent a better way to project the risks and opportunities of retirement and develop appropriate spending recommendations? He's done subsequent work. He did another one in 2013 where he goes through, but he graphically illustrates 15-year cycles, and that's not the reason I chose 15 years, because I did that 30 years ago, but it certainly confirms my anecdotal thoughts on how my market cycles worked.
Yeah, and you know, it's not that you're going to retire at the beginning of one 15-year market cycle and then have two distinct. No, you're going to retire somewhere most likely in the middle.
Which is why he used rolling 15-year periods to determine that low 15-year cycles are followed by high 15-year cycles.
Now, why is it important for somebody who's put the money aside anyway for 15 or more years, why is it important for them to know that there's a 15-year rolling cycle.
Well, remember,
as a 15-year cycle.
Here he's talking to advisors. Kitsis is the advisor's advisor,
yes.
Right? So he's talking to advisors so that they would actually have a regime that said, you know what? You could be entering retirement at a time where your next 10, 15 years are going to be pretty ugly. And if that happens, you need to make sure that you're not draining from the equity side of the portfolio, because if you are, you may drain it all too quickly so that you can't enjoy the benefits of the next 15-year cycle.
Because you won't have any money in there.
You won't have any money in there. Yeah. So this is why the work of Kitsis, the work of Fowle, and I dare say some of the work that I've done much, much earlier than them, going back into the 90s. And again, mine was based on anecdotal experience and Ibbotson data. And the Ibbotson data told me that stocks had never produced a 15-year period in the negative. In other words, if you bought the S&P, reinvested dividends for 15 years, you never suffered a loss. All I wanted to do was answer the question that my clients were asking me, will I lose money in the stock market? And my answer was, statistically speaking, if you hold on with dividends reinvested for 15 years, no. What I've learned since then is 15-year cycles are really a compelling thing, because a bad one is followed by a good one is followed by a bad one.
But if I've got a strategy that says you're really not going to touch this money other than value averaging, which you can do and should do from time to time, I'm not going to touch this money anyway for 15 years. What, again, I might say to, you know, what is there to for me to look out for?
Well, again, we're talking to advisors,
yes,
here.
Yes, so the advisor is going to be setting up their client's portfolio such that they know that the next, you know, likely the next 10, 15 years will be in a down cycle. Maybe.
Now, all Kitsis needed to do was send him my last book.
Exactly. See, this is where
it would have been fine.
This is where I'm going, because it may not even necessarily matter if your strategy is correct. I mean, it matters, yes, but I'm not sure that for the person with the right strategy that it's critical.
Well,
and maybe I'm wrong.
I think. Because everybody that does some kind of retirement planning, whether it's an advisor or an individual, is doing certain modeling, right?
Oh, sure.
So when you're doing certain modeling, what he's saying here is don't do modeling based on historical norm
averages. Okay, yeah, I get behind that.
He's
yeah.
saying maybe you should model a much lower rate of return for the first X number of years, and then a much higher rate of return subsequently, and see how your plan works out. That's what he's doing here. And I think it's brilliant, personally.
Oh, it is. Now, is he talking about somebody who's doing more of a systematic withdrawal method?
Well, yeah, everybody in this on this side of the world is talking about systematic withdrawal.
Okay, then it's brilliant.
You're looking at a guy that doesn't do systematic withdrawals.
Which is why
until
I thought all he needed to do was look at your first book, go way back, and all right.
Yeah, I mean, we would talk about, like you say, value averaging from time to time. That's more strategic than automatic.
Oh, sure.
Automatic rebalancing is what the systematic withdrawal guys do.
Right.
I've never believed in a systematic withdrawal because I've always believed in making sure you could take care of your income needs for an extended period of time.
Strategic, as you said.
We're out of time. We can be strategic with you. Just email me. Go to RayLucia.com or simply call us, 844-RAY-SHOW. Now go out and make it a blessed day. Even you, Johnny Dean.
Thank you.
We'll have our ashes coming up soon. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home.